right up here a few miles, there's a light, a traffic light at 92 and Macklin Road, and I don't know about other folks that live in that general area that Macklin Road touches, but I avoided it at all costs for several years as they were doing construction. And I still kind of do, by the way, but there's a light, that light up there, I still think it's messed up from the time they put it in. You ever go on to a traffic light and it doesn't work right? Maybe it's, you know, 5:30 in the morning. You're the only person awake in the whole country, right? And the light lets everybody else go, maybe even two or three times before it's your turn. Well, I think that one still does that. There's, for Powder Springs folks, thank you. For Powder Springs folks, there's Richard Saylor's and Old Lost Mountain. I go that way a lot because I come the back way to the church building. I like the scenery. Plus, remember the whole Macklin Road comment. I try to avoid it too. Every once in a while, that light will do the same thing. It'll turn green for everybody. I think it's just me, actually. It turns green for everybody except for me. Another one even closer to my house, and again, for Powder Springs people, at Bullard and Lost Mountain. If you're crossing Lost Mountain, every once in a while, it does the same thing. It just lets those Lost Mountain people do whatever they want to do. But us Bullard people have to wait what seems like a week. And I tell you, it's annoying. Socks in which the elastic is worn out are also annoying, by the way. Just case in point. Even more serious than that is the person whose whole life seems to revolve around himself or herself. Every action, every word seems to be focused on him or on her. And now, let's be transparent for a minute. Sometimes that person is looking back at us in the mirror, right? Because we can all be that some person or that person from time to time. So that last thought mine, that last annoyance maybe in mind, let's read a little bit. As Tim said, Mark is the second book in the New Testament. And I'm going right back to where Tim was just a moment ago. And they went to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I pray." And he took with him Peter and James and John and began to be greatly distressed and troubled. Mark doesn't make it as clear, but in case you didn't pick up on it, what's going on is Jesus has the group of disciples with him, but Peter, James, and John, apparently he takes along a little further, which is not unusual. Those are what's often referred to, those three, as the inner circle of Jesus' followers. And he said to them, "My soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch." And going a little farther, he fell on the ground and prayed that if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. And he said, "Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Remove this cup from me, yet not what I will, but what you will." And he came and found them sleeping, and he said to Peter, "Simon, are you asleep? Could you not watch 1 hour? Watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." And again he went away and prayed, saying the same words. And again he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were very heavy, and they did not know what to answer him. And he came the third time and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and taking your rest? It is enough. The hour has come. The Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand. And then a little bit later, and as Peter was below in the courtyard, one of the servant girls of the high priest came, and seeing Peter warming himself, she looked at him and said, "You also were with the Nazarene Jesus." But he denied it, saying, "I neither know nor understand what you mean." And he went into the gateway, and the rooster crowed. And the servant girl saw him and again began to say to the bystanders, "This man is one of them." But again he denied it. And after a little while, the bystanders again said to Peter, "Certainly you are one of them, for you are a Galilean." But he began to invoke a curse on himself and to swear, "I do not know this man of whom you speak." And immediately, the rooster crowed a second time. And Peter remembered how Jesus had said to him, "Before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times." And he broke down and he wept. And as soon as it was morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council, and they bound Jesus and led him away and delivered him over to Pilate. These stories, or many others, by the way, these stories just happen to be in close proximity of one another. But they illustrate something it's really important, and it's particularly stark when we look closely. And that is, they illustrate the difference between submission to God and self-focus. They illustrate the difference between submitting to God and self-protection. They show a contrast between submission to God and focus solely on personal survival, personal reputation, personal concerns. We see the contrast pretty clearly, don't we? What does Jesus pray? And Luke Wright tells us that sweat drops of blood, literally, that hematidrosis, I think they call it in the scientific world. Jesus is so strained and so stressed and in so much anxiety, or whatever we want to call it, that the blood begins to sweat out of his pores. That's significant. And so what Jesus has got going on here, and what the Father wills, are a little bit of contrast themselves. "I know you have all power, Father. You can do anything." So here's, it really is not a question, is it? It's a demand. "Remove this cup from me. Yet." And here's the great contrast between Jesus and everybody else in this narrative. "Not what I will, but what you will." Jesus surrendering his own desires. Jesus submitting his own desires to the will of the Father. Let me ask a question, by the way. Is there a difference between what we desire and what we do? I hope so. How many human beings in here this morning? You can raise your hand. Okay, yeah. So I hope the answer to that often is yes. There is a difference. Lord willing, especially as Christian people, there's a difference between what we desire, what we want to do, and then what we do. Paul writes about that, I would say eloquently, but it's kind of hard to follow, actually, in Romans chapter 7, doesn't he? Paul understood as well as anybody that the contrast between what the human will wants to do and what God desires for us to do. That's this moment for Jesus. What does Jesus desire in this moment? Remove this cup from me. But what does Jesus surrender to? The will of the Father. He is the contrast because everyone else in these scenes, everyone else is following what they want. Just look at the disciples for a moment. Their physical desire for rest overpowers the will of the Son for them in that moment. They never consulted the will of God. They only looked in the mirror at that guy in the mirror and said, hey, what do you want in this moment? Because that's what we're going to do. What do you desire in this moment? Because that's what I'm going to do. What is your wish for this time in life? And that's what I'm going to do. They never consulted the will of God. And it brings up a question. I have a few questions this morning, not many. The first one is this. Where is it in my life that I am choosing what is comfortable over whatever it is that God is asking me to do or to be? Now look at Peter in particular in the story. Peter is choosing self-preservation, is he not, over faithfulness to the Master. He's choosing self-preservation over faithfulness to Jesus. When he's confronted about being one of his disciples, what does Peter do? Most of us know this story well, and if you never heard it, you just did a moment ago. When confronted about his knowledge of his relationship with the Master Jesus, what does Peter say? He calls down curses on his own head and says, I don't know the man. As Peter's desire to protect himself became more important than Peter living in the will of God and a commitment to the Christ. Peter never consulted the will of God in that moment. Another question. When following Christ put something in my life at stake, whether it be money, relationships, comfort, reputation, or any number of other things, when following Christ puts something in my life at stake, whose will wins? Jesus's or mine? Look at the religious leaders, and we only got a brief verse, but it was enough. It's enough information there to let us know that they wanted Jesus eliminated rather than following the truth of God that had been before them for their entire lives. They had a desire instead for control, for security, for preservation of their own religious authority. All of that outweighed submission to God. They were far more concerned with getting rid of Jesus than in asking if they just might be doing something in opposition to God. They never consulted the will of God. So, to recap, the disciples would rather sleep. Peter would rather save his own skin. The religious leaders preferred control, authority, and dare we say it, some sort of fame. It was only Jesus who surrendered his will to the will of the Father, the only one. The disciples, here's what I want right now. Peter in particular, here's what it is that will keep me safe. The leaders, here's what will preserve our place, our position, our control, our authority. And then Jesus. Not what I will, but what you will. So again, where may I be choosing in life what is comfortable over whatever it is that God may be asking me to do or to be? And again, when following Christ puts something in my life at stake, money, relationships, reputation, comfort, or any other number of things, whose will wins? Jesus's or mine? And then a new question that I haven't asked yet. When God sees the decisions that I will make this week, will he see me following his will, or will he see me following mine? The disciples, Peter especially, the religious authority of the day, all in stark contrast to Jesus, who, although his desire in that moment was for that cup to be removed, he surrendered his will to God the Father. You know, a lot of us, most of us in this room, had a particular, I'll call it a particular moment of surrender. For me, it was a Sunday night. I've told this story before, but y'all don't even remember what I preached last week. I don't either, by the way, so we're good. I can tell it again. So I remember heading to Liberty Hill Church of Christ one Sunday evening. I think it was summertime. I can't remember. It was still daylight, so I'm assuming it was around this time of year. And those of you that know that path on Queen Mill Road, right, doing this number on those curvy roads, and I was sitting in the back seat, and I was just in a spiritual state because I knew that I had to make a decision to surrender my will to the will of God. And so that night, Jeff, after the fountain free, I'll never forget, or actually during it, I came sprinting down, I think, before we got the first three words out, and I was immersed. And that was that particular moment when I surrendered. And everybody in here, most everybody in here, has a story. It may not have been a Sunday night. It might have been early on a Thursday morning. It might have been in a lake or a very cold mountain stream. It might have been just in a bathtub, just about anywhere. But everybody pretty much has a story this morning about that particular moment when you and I surrendered to be immersed in Jesus' name, to say, I will follow your will.